welcome to another episode of Sound Radar, Games Radar's video game music and audio podcast. Today's featured game soundtrack is To the Moon, an indie PC game, and I am joined by two special guests today, Con Gao of Freebird Games and composer Laura Shigihara. Hello and welcome.
Hi.
Hi. It's nice to be here.
Well, thank you guys both for joining me. So I wanted to kind of get straight your roles. Like, Con, I know it says that you're the director, designer, and composer and illustrator for the game. And then Laura also helped with composing, is that correct?
Mm-hmm, definitely. Yeah, I kind of just put on a hat that kind of transforms into all the other roles quite pretentiously, but...
magical hat.
Magical hat. Like a leprechaun.
Well, how do you like that role? Because then you kind of have control over everything. Are you working on your own? But I do see that there is a small team that kind of helped you, or are you primarily working on your own?
There is a team of awesomely talented people who I'm really fortunate to be working with, like Laura, for example. And I think they really helped, you know, shape the game to be how it is. For the most part, I think that team consists of artists and some coders and Laura.
And Laura, I know your name is featured on the soundtrack, and you sing a couple of the songs on the soundtrack, is that correct?
Yeah. One of the songs I wrote and composed, and then did the singing and stuff, and then one of them, Can actually did the song, and I just provided the lyrics and the singing for it. There's like a couple other tracks that were based around the Everything's All Right theme.
Oh, great. Mm-hmm. So how did you guys meet and decide to collaborate on this project?
We met at a game development community a few years back, actually. And I think it was actually Laura's music that made me go, whoa, this is pretty good. This was before the whole Plants vs. Zombies took off. And so I was listening to this the soundtrack for Laura's game called Metal Loon. And I was like, wow, this is, because you don't see original music made by the one who developed and written the game that often. And so when I saw that, I was like, wow, this is awesome. You know, so I started contacting her, you know, to talk about some of the songs that she's written. And I think that was how it started.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Kind of amazing how, you know, when you guys start off as indie developers, it's like you do a bit of everything. Because I know that when you talk to people who work in bigger companies, you know, they're just a coder or they're just the artist. You guys have to be like a jack of all trades. And how's that?
It is quite chaotic, but it's a hell of fun.
And how did this idea originate? I know you said on your website that it's something like a project that you started more than 5 years ago.
Oh, no. The 5 years ago thing is just when I first started making games and the like in general.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. As for To the Moon, it just started a bit over a year ago, I think. Oh, wait. No, I mean 1 year and a half ago.
Oh, that's not too long. So how did this get started?
The original concept was basically started a few years ago when my grandfather had a heart condition acting up, and he was sent to the hospital and had some surgery done and the like. But fortunately that he recovered and everything went okay. But, you know, it's the kind of thing that happens to everyone, right? It's just a part of life. But when it happens, it kind of makes you think that, you know, it kind of made me think, you know, one day I'm going to be there and I'm going to be going through the same thing. And if there would be anything I'd regret. So that was how the original concept kind of came to be. And then after that, it kind of got thing with more details as time went on with a variety of other things that happened to me and some others who are close to me.
Oh, I see. So it's like it kind of evolved from that initial concept into like the story that we see today. And because the game is so heavily focused on storytelling and it's really about the experience, but the music plays such a crucial part in like conveying the right emotion. So how did you approach that soundtrack?
for some of the scenes, I think Laura does this too when we make games, mm-hmm. and because it's quite convenient that, you know, we can do some of the music ourselves. And so whenever we get stuck at a scene, we would just write the music first, and then it's so it kind of acts like a filter, like a buffer between, you know, all the jumbo mumbos that goes on in the head and, you know, what mm-hmm. gets put on the paper.
It's like sometimes you have something you want to convey, I think, and when you can just sit down at the piano and just play, it's, I don't know, it helps facilitate the process. I thought that was neat that you did that too.
Yeah, like Laura, I see you on, you have your YouTube channel and you play a lot of stuff on the piano. So how did you get into like composing music for video games? Or just getting into music in general?
I started taking piano lessons when I was 5. My parents were cool and they let me take lessons for 11 years. And I studied a lot about like arrangement and production on my own in college because I didn't major in music, but it was just something that I really enjoyed doing on the side. And I actually got pulled into music as a career kind of randomly because I was studying business and international relations and computer science and stuff like that in college. But then on the side, I made a lot of songs and I gave it to one of my friends in Japan, and she submitted it to a bunch of record companies without telling me.
Oh, wow.
And so that led to like this whole long tangent where I auditioned at companies in Japan and got offered contracts. And that was sort of the turning point for me where I was like, you know, I think I want to do music as a career. So I'm really passionate about it. So.
Oh, yeah. That's great. And kind of how about you? How did you get your start into music?
I actually started composing because of the fact that I was trying to make games. At first, when I started 5 years ago, I had a really good friend of mine, James. He was helping me to write the music for the games. And one summer, he went on vacation or something. How dare he, right? So I was like, but I need these songs. So I kind of just, you know, kind of got forced into trying to do some of those myself. And that's pretty much how I started.
Did you know he just learned to play the piano like on his own over the past few years?
Wow, really?
Like, that wasn't even his primary instrument. I was really impressed by that, like how quickly he got really, really good.
Yeah, some people just have a knack for picking up instruments. I talked to another musician composer and he's like, well, I play like maybe 15 main instruments, but maybe like 100 different varieties. I was like, what? I play one and you can barely play one, so... Oh, it's amazing. But, you know, it's fun, especially it seems like everyone I talk to is super passionate about it and they really enjoy doing it, whether it's on the side or as like a full-time gig. And then, so Laura, do you feel like you prefer doing more composing and more musical stuff than the actual game development side?
I think it's kind of 50-50 because I really like storytelling and just sort of seeing cutscenes come to life. And I think that a lot of times if I work on music a really long time, then I need a break from it. So I need another kind of creative outlet. Mm-hmm. So it's during those times that I really enjoy kind of switching gears and working on the story or the game development part. And then after doing that for a while, I'm like, okay, I need to switch back to music again.
Well, that's good. You can kind of juggle both and until you get tired of one and then jump to the other.
Yeah, I think that's one of the awesome things about indie development too, because when you have so many hats, you can just, you know, it's kind of like, you know, you're sleeping on the pillow and it gets hot and you can flip to the other side.
Yeah, totally.
How has that experience been for you guys? Because I know it is a competitive market out there. There are a lot of indie developers, but how has it been so far?
For me, for To the Moon personally, I think, well, I really have no benchmark, to be honest, because it's my first commercial game. Mm-hmm. But I think it's going rather well. I'm really grateful for, you know, how far it's gotten so far, especially considering I chose one of the worst times of the year to release this. Yeah, like if there's one thing I learned from about release date from this this whole experience, it's don't be dumb. But yeah, so all things considered, though, I think it's been going pretty well.
Yeah, Yeah. And how about you, Laura?
Well, I think one of the biggest things I like about the indie game dev community is just that you can be really creative. I think working at a company or when you're working on someone else's project, and they have a lot of constraints, you know, like, oh, you have to appeal to this audience and you're skewing too male or too female, or you're not touching this demographic. We need to add these things. And I think one of the best things about being an indie dev is that you can kind of choose what you want to do. And so it's a much more natural process and it's a lot more creative.
I think a lot of the companies, the more structured companies, they, like, it's understandable, but they are more afraid to fail than they want to, mm-hmm. you know, succeed big.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, so that kind of puts a lot of limitations as far as creativity goes.
And for them, there's a lot riding on it. A lot of people's jobs, this has to make money. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so you lose something in the process. So going back to the music, so for Laura, an example, like Everything's All Right, it's like, did Khan give you kind of like what he wanted, or was it kind of like, you just compose a song that fits this game? And like, how did you guys approach that?
I think, I can't remember which order it went in, but I believe like Ken told me the story and I was just like, that's beautiful. And so I was just sitting at the piano one night and it just kind of came out. And immediately after I wrote it, I recorded the video and like sent it to him.
Short steps, deep breath, everything is all right. Chin up, I can't step into the spotlight. She said, I'm sad, somehow without any words. I just stood there, searching for an answer. When this world is no
like, this is perfect.
Oh, wow.
And it's really fortunate too, because with these things, you know, often it's hard to put what you want as far as, you know, artwork and music goes into words, you mm-hmm. know. So, and having someone like Laura who herself, you know, does the same kind of work with music and, you know, writing the stories and the like herself, I think that really helped, you know, to do something that's exactly what one envisions.
Yeah, what struck me about the story too, it's like, you know, not only is it very touching and sentimental, but like it was also very funny. And then by listening to the soundtrack, it's like I didn't think there would be like any real comedic elements to it, but you know, from the beginning I was just like, oh, this is actually really funny, so it balances out. And then some of the music, you know, changes up too. It's like there were some tense moments and the music changed, and like that changed the whole mood, the whole atmosphere. Mm-hmm. And one of my favorite moments was, I believe the horse riding part was the Take Me Anywhere mm-hmm. track. Yeah, and that, I just had a blast like just running around and watching Neil like freak out on the horse. Guys, what were some of your most memorable tracks that you can think of, and why?
For me personally, I will have to open up the folder first, and this is a little embarrassing because I'm one of the composers, so.
I'm trying to think of the name of the one I really like. It's da 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 da.
Ah, that's
one.
That would be. Yes, Born a Stranger. Oh. I think that's
okay,
the one.
Okay, yeah. I love that one. It's so simple, but it's just really, I don't know, very sad, and but not like typical sad. It's like makes me feel very insightful or very, I don't know, it's like deep.
I think my favorite one is Between a Tree and a Squirrel. I think that's what it's called, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
oh,
I think
the second track, yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. That's the first song that plays after the main theme, I think, at the title.
Okay, so why is it your favorite?
it's kind of quirky, in a way, and it's just, I don't know, I think that was one of the tracks that, it's one of the tracks that's used in one of the first scenes, but at the same time, it was one of the tracks that I wrote last in the development process.
Oh, I see.
And yeah, and I think overall, like the mood that I wanted to convey and what, you know, what actually went on in there, I think that was, I just liked how it matched.
Did you end up rewriting a lot or did everything kind of stick?
I think I actually ended up rewriting the scenes according to the music more than the music according to the scenes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so that's kind of like usually the other approach when everything's done and then you add music to it. So did you have melodies kind of in mind already that you really wanted to use?
Pretty much. I tried to, you know, use the melodies with the actual story somehow. Mm-hmm. So that went on mostly with the main theme, which, you know, one of the characters from the game essentially composed himself. And also I tried to, you know, emphasize the song Laura wrote, Everything's All Right, which is just fantastic. So, you know, it's kind of an interesting process because when I'm able to control the music and the story for the most part, I can kind of try to mix them up a bit and intertwine them, and no one's here to complain about it.
That's true, you don't have to run it by anybody since you're the boss.
Yeah.
And I also was poking around on the forums and it says that you guys are going to come out with sheet music at some point. Is this true for anyone that wants to play?
Yeah. For the main theme, I'm working on a sheet music. It's kind of there already, but it's just kind of arpeggio-y so far.
Yeah.
So, I actually never put down an actual sheet music for the recording that was made for it. Because
oh, okay.
That was sort of an improvisation kind of thing.
So were you purposely going for a more, like for some of them, even commented in the game itself that it is repetitive and very simple. Were you aiming for that versus like the more complex like tunes?
For the main theme, that was sort of intended as, okay, I hate to use the word metaphor, but sort of a metaphor for one of the characters that it referred to.
Mm-hmm.
With the two notes thing.
Oh, got it. We can talk about that more in the second half of the podcast, yeah. Where we can go into spoiler territory. So what kind of games do you guys both like to play? I know you guys are both really into storytelling.
I really like Mega Man. So I was big in the NES Mega Man games. I love StarCraft. Mm-hmm. And my favorite game of all time is Chrono Trigger.
Ooh, yeah.
So I liked a lot of Super Nintendo games.
That era. That worked out that the game To the Moon is very much like that. A lot of people bring up Chrono Trigger when they see it.
Yeah.
And what about you, Khan?
Ironically, I kind of play games like Age of Empires and The Sims and stuff like that, which is not story-oriented at all. But, oh, well, as far as story-oriented games go, though, one of my favorite recent ones, relatively, is Dragon Age Origins.
Mm-hmm.
That was actually like one of the first RPGs that I've played since when I was a kid, you know, with all the awesome old school RPGs. And I was kind of blown away because they handled, like, you know, the epic story and the personal touches so well,
mm-hmm.
which often gets lost in like something of that larger scale.
Oh, that's true. Did you play the second one?
I haven't tried the second one. I'm a little afraid to after I read about it.
Yeah, it didn't get quite as, I guess, rave reviews, but mm-hmm. I mean, if you like it, you should
check it
out.
I'm sure it's still a good game, though, but yeah.
Oh, absolutely. So, you know, for the two of you, since you're pretty much independent developers, you're not bound by PR rules, but do you guys have projects that you're working on next and anything you can talk about?
As far as... for me personally, I'm... right now, what's on the table is the next episode for the To the Moon series.
Mm-hmm.
That's still in the conception phase, though.
How many do you plan on putting out?
It really depends. I know the first one, and I know the last one. As far as the middle, so like, you know, it kind of, it doesn't really matter much. It just depends on how long it lasts without becoming, you know, uninspired.
Okay. Well, how about you, Laura? What are you working on next?
I'm trying to finish up my game. I'm working on a Super Nintendo-style RPG called Malamoon. And I've been actually working on it for a long time, but I keep getting taken off to work on other projects.
So sorry about that.
I'm almost finished. Oh, no. Just work it. But ironically, the biggest roadblock I have right now is the music. Mm-hmm. I have like a lot of music still left to compose. And then besides that, I've just been working on a lot of like independent songs and stuff in the indie community. We did this Play for Japan album, which was like a charity album for Japan. A few of us are trying to do like music videos mm-hmm. related to the songs that we contributed. So I've been working with a couple animators on that. So,
oh, cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. So where can people go if they want to kind of follow your next game?
Probably they can just go to my website or my YouTube channel. Mm-hmm. And if you want, I could send that to you.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I usually post stuff there. And then at my YouTube channel, I usually post about music projects that I'm working on. So, yeah.
All right, very cool.
And Laura's YouTube channel is super cheeky.
Great. So where do you guys see video game music heading into the future?
Well, I think that what Kim mentioned about the more orchestral movie soundtrack stuff, I think there's a lot of merging of that. But at the same time, I think that in the like game music aficionado communities, a lot of people are kind of missing the charm of the old like Nintendo and Super Nintendo style music. I think that music was charming because since they had a lot of limitations, composers couldn't fall back on like live instruments and high quality samples and stuff like that. So instead they had to be super creative with their compositions, and they ended up coming up with really melodic and memorable tracks that were also kind of complex and very creative in like all the different genres that they mix together. So I think that we're seeing kind of a, I guess, resurgence of that in the indie community, sort of like a backlash against a lot of the just generic orchestral stuff. A lot of people are like, oh, you know, we want more melodic stuff, more stuff that has the charm of the old school soundtracks. And so hopefully it's like going in that direction as well.
Mm-hmm. I think there's a trade-off between, you know, complexity and simplicity. With the simplistic stuff, it's a lot easier to be memorable because there's a lot less background noise and layers going on. So it's easier to focus on, you know, the one single melody that's happening in the forefront. But at the same time, with complex stuff, it's easier to bring in like an overall atmosphere of, you know, a full orchestra with different textures. So there's a good thing. There are good things from both sides, and I hope, you know, because I hope they can both kind of stick around. And,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, what kind of advice would you guys have for people who want to get into video game music composing?
Just start composing, I suppose. it's one of those things that I think it's one of those things where networking is also extremely vital to get anything, you know, to get into the actual, to break into the actual industry. I think Laura did some awesome slideshows and stuff about that in some of the conventions.
Oh yeah, right. I gave a talk at GDC with some of my peers about tips for getting into the industry. Mm-hmm. But I think like one thing that's really helpful is pick a game soundtrack or like a video game that you like and try to recreate the soundtrack. You don't have to do the whole thing, especially if it's like some really super long game, but you know, just say it's like Yoshi's Island or Mega Man 2, just try to recreate a couple of the level themes. Mm-hmm. And that way you get a feel not just for composing and coming up with like melodies and chord progressions and stuff like that, but you also get a feel for creating stuff that matches the gameplay, because that's a pretty big skill in and of itself. So you develop music that's not, you know, annoying or makes the player more frustrated, but that it matches. So.
Oh, that's good advice.
Yeah.
So the second half of the podcast, we're going to get into a little spoiler territory because I had a lot of questions about To the Moon. So you mentioned that it draws upon a lot of like real life experience for you, and the main theme is regret. So for you, because you know, in the end, you're manipulating his memories so that he thinks that he's going to the moon. And I know that people kind of debate, you're like, would you want to kind of rechange your past superficially to not have any regrets, or would you want that to be real?
It's hard to say. I think it's a matter of, you know, ignorance is a bliss or not. You know, it's kind of funny that, you know, I've been spending over a year making this game based on this concept, and I never actually thought about it from, like, you know, a first-person perspective. But I think I would. But yeah, at the same time, I can see a lot of arguments against it as well, and those are really valid arguments.
Mm-hmm. You make a lot of video game references, like, right at the beginning. I don't even know if I can, like, count them all. And there are in some cases where you choose, like, the option to skip going outside, you'll actually miss a lot of it. So, yeah, for anyone that hasn't played it yet, I urge you to explore. Granted, I hope you're not listening to this and you haven't played it yet, because that kind of defeat the whole purpose. But, so the whole Anya thing, the lighthouse, What was Anya exactly to River? Is it because of the whole connection with the stars, or, like, is there a significance in her name? Like, can you tell us a little bit more about?
I'm not going to comment on the actual name itself because I am having a blast watching the GameSpot crew debating.
Yeah, I listened to that.
Yeah. But as far as, you know, just the lighthouse goes, I think it's kind of a friend figure to River. And in a way, she's kind of projecting herself as one of the lighthouses that she was watching when she was young. Because, you know, with them being so far apart and, you know, the difficulty that comes with actually communicating. And so in a way, she kind of sees herself in that lighthouse. So she tries her hardest to, you know, give it company and the like, because it's kind of a part of her.
Mm-hmm. And what about the origami, the rabbit? Because, like, the first time I went through the game, I didn't actually look up who, was it Todd Atwood, the name?
Tony Atwood.
Tony Atwood, yeah. Because that was the clue. Because when you're playing through the game, you know that there's something wrong with River, or that there seems to be something wrong, and then I didn't really make the connection until later. I was just like, oh, okay. Well, now the things kind of make sense. But then, like, she would keep asking Johnny, like, what do you see when you're looking at this two-colored rabbit? And, like, what was the significance of that? And I understand if you don't want to give this out because, you know, you like hearing people debate about it.
But no worries. I think I can give out, you know, the core of it. That's pretty much already set in the game. Not directly, but it was essentially, you know, at the childhood scene when they were sitting on the log.
Yeah.
And they were looking at the rabbit, and I think at the end of that, River was like, okay, I think they were trying to make a constellation from the sky, right? A constellation of a rabbit.
Yeah.
So what ended up happening was that River made a constellation where the moon was the rabbit's belly.
Yeah.
And, you know, the stars made up the rest of the rabbit. And so the origami rabbit that she ended up making later on in her life had, you know, the last one, the one she tried the hardest on, I suppose, had a yellow body and, you know, blue head and feet and the like. So it was kind of like, you know, she was trying to remake the constellation with an origami to remind Johnny. And she asked him, you know, in the same style, in the same manner that she asked him when they were kids, what did he see in that?
Oh, okay. See, I play this game once, it's like there are so many things that I miss, and I'm always like, okay, someone else in this office needs to play it so I can talk to them about it and ask them these questions, because it kind of goes over my head the first time. I'm like, wait, I need to play it again. It's like, what did you experience? But yeah, I know it's a lot deeper than that. So I was like, okay, nice clarification. And as for the two doctors, like, they're absolutely hilarious, and I can't, you know, I don't even know which one I like more, because they're so different and funny in their own way. How did you come up with these characters, and, like, what, you know, what was your inspiration for them?
Well, Dr. Rosaline was basically me past 2 a.m., and Dr. Watts was me past 3 a.m. But yeah, for the most part, they just tried their hardest to, you know, ruin the story, the sentimental story for the players.
Well, that's what I love about it, because it's so self-aware. It's like it starts to get really corny, and then they mention it, and it does have that kind of balance, and you know that I think adds just as much to the storyline, you know, as like the other parts too. So, What has the reaction been to the story and the game itself right now that you've been seeing?
It's been surprisingly positive. I'm genuinely surprised. I mean, because it's one of those things that's, you know, the game is sort of a game, but at the same time, it's like one of the worst things that people usually bring up about video games from gamers. It's a chain of cutscenes, essentially, you know, with mildly interactive sequences in between. Mm-hmm. So I really had no idea how people would take that. But fortunately, the reception has been genuinely positive so far for the most part, and I'm really grateful for that. It's just great to see, you know, because with indie games, you just make what you want to make and what you, you know, want to play yourself. So it's always a great sign to see, you know, others who share your same vision in a way.
And yeah, part of To the Moon, I mean, it is kind of it's an interactive story. There isn't a ton of like gamey elements to it. Like there are the puzzles in between jumping through the mementos. And like, what was the significance of that or having that part in there?
I think in a way that kind of, you know, brings you, you know, gives you a bit of a space to just absorb what just happened in that particular sequence. And it kind of also acts as kind of a page turning process in a way. Because I suppose it's not the best reference to make, but nowadays, you know, people tend to like their games divided in segments. So it kind of acts like a pseudo segmentation thing, but at the same time, not really.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like a checkpoint, like save here and then continue on
to
the next
part. Yeah,
pretty
much. Yeah. And I think, you know, even though there's not a lot of interaction involved in the game, but any sort of interaction with the medium, like even just being able to walk around the place, even though that has no, you know, conscious gameplay value in a sense. But at the end, I think when you were standing on the bridge, for example, right before the finale, I think there's a certain sense of fulfillment and satisfaction from just being, you know, directly being able to control the players, the doctors, to, you know, help them go through the sequence at one point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And now that the game's done and out, is there anything that you would go back to change, or are you pretty satisfied with how it came out?
Zombies. That was a terrible execution on my part, I think. It was toward the end, too. In a way, I think not a lot of people caught this because of how frustrating that was. Mm-hmm. But I actually tried to make a reference to Plants vs. Zombies with that, because Neo was actually throwing pots of plants at zombies to defeat them.
I did notice the plants. So I was like, there's these pots everywhere, and I have to like go around them. They're in my way. I was like,
that was kind of a rushed effort on my part, and I'm just thinking of ways. I think I'm gonna slow the zombies down for the most part. Wait, by the way, Sylvia and Laura too. Were you guys playing through that sequence with a mouse or a keyboard?
Keyboard.
Keyboard, yeah.
Because it told me to switch the keyboard. That's why.
Oh, yeah. That was before that. And then, like, when the zombies popped up, I think I forgot to change the keyboard thing, and it just, the normal control animation came up with a mouse. So I was afraid that to play through that sequence with a mouse is, like, 10 times even worse.
I like to play those kinds of games with the keyboard thing.
Yeah,
easier to move around.
Easier to manage. But
yeah.
Okay, so maybe not so much zombies next time around, or at least in a different way.
Not my expertise. I'll leave zombies to George Fan.
But I'm really curious about like a list of all the video game references you make in this game, because every time Neil would break the bubble, he would use some kind of like fighting game fireball thing. So
unfortunately, he wasn't he kind of got pulled back a bit by Eva.
Yeah,
so there was, I think there were only
like
three...
a My Little Pony too.
Yeah, like one of the members on my forum, on Freebird Forum, mm-hmm. Raxus or Joe, he's like the pony on the forum. And he kind of dragged me into it. And it's like, I'm not a huge, you know, brony per se, but I actually have watched the episodes, and they're very relaxing, to say the least. And I think they helped me. Yeah, honestly, I think part of the reason why the game is completed is due to that, due to being able to watch that to de-stress myself.
Well, everyone has their way of unwinding, I guess.
Because yeah, I mean, when you watch shows like that, you know that the characters aren't going to be beheaded mm-hmm. by the end of the third season.
Yes.
You know, so it's a nice thought.
Yeah, or at least you hope not. That would be an interesting turn. Well, do you guys have any thoughts to add about, you know, now that the game's out and like all the work that you've done, and is there anything you want to talk about or promote?
For me personally, for this Christmas, I'm trying to release a little Christmas special kind of content following up to the moon. It'll just be the two doctors and perhaps some of their colleagues. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like a Christmas thing, but it won't, you know, it's not anything major. In fact, I still gotta get started on it because there's just so much stuff to handle right now. But I just want to, you know, provide something like a little free bonus content for, you know, everyone who's helped support the game so far, and, you know, just get something out there that'll hopefully be a fun experience.
What about you, Laura?
Just basically, like, to people who haven't played To the Moon yet, if they're like, oh, it's not really my type of game or something like that, like, they should totally check it out, because it's one of these kind of rare games where you play through it and you almost feel changed, or there's just something that happens to you, especially at the very last scene, that's just so moving and so, I don't know, it's like more of an experience than a game, I think.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And you know, I talk about this in my review too. It's like, it's one of those games that leaves a lasting impression, and it's something that you want to talk to others about. And it is, you know, it's short, but it's like so condensed, and every moment feels like it should be there. Like nothing seems, you know, tacked on or extra. Maybe the plant throwing part, but that part's fine. But no, people should absolutely go experience it. And the soundtrack's also available. It's like $5 or any donation, and half of it goes to charity. So I highly encourage people to check it out on Bandcamp, and you can download the game, Freebird Games. Is it for $11.99? Now, is it going to be on Steam, hopefully, in the near future? Some people were asking.
Hopefully. Yeah. Fingers crossed.
Well, let's hope so, because then that'll kind of open it up to another wider market. Because right now, it's just word of mouth, right? Spreading?
Yeah.
No, that's great.
And I just a word of thanks to, you know, all the media outlets who've covered it so far. It's just amazing. Like back then, I thought, okay, Sophia, I thought you guys were scary.
No, we're totally not scary. Come on.
Yeah, I just saw you guys with the, you know, Halloween costumes at the time. But yeah, like, it's just amazing, you know. And thank you guys so much for all the coverage you've provided so far.
Yeah, I wanted to thank you guys both for joining me. It's an excellent game, and congratulations.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
And that brings us to the end of our show. Thanks everyone for listening. And be sure to follow Sound Radar on Twitter @gr_soundradar for updates and future giveaways.